Hello, and welcome to Lesson 22. This lesson is still part of a few lessons where I'm going to catch up on the questions and potential fuel for discussions that have been hitting my inbox. Please feel free to send any questions or comments to the number specified by Nishma Saini, and I'll be more than happy to address them in the order that they arrive to me. So here's another question that came in. This question was actually based on a question that I had previously answered in Lecture 16. Although it's always a good idea to go back and review lectures, I don't expect you to jump around when you're trying to follow my train of thought here, so I'll review it for you. First, I will ask the original question from Lecture 16, and then I will go back over the answer that I gave then. After that, I will ask the caller's follow-up question and answer that, Be'ezus Hashem. So here goes. The question from Lecture 16 was asked as follows. What do I do if at the Shabbos table, my child keeps on saying, stinky, stinky, you're stinky, you're stinky? I tried to take my child away from the table and put her on the porch and closing the door. But when I bring her back, she keeps saying, you're stinky, you're stinky, you're stinky. So here was the answer to that question. Since our caller didn't mention any particular diagnosis attached to this child, I'm going to address it the way I would address it for a child who is developing typically. This is clearly an intention-seeking behavior. The child is clever enough to know how to hijack negative attention at the Shabbos table, because in general, the Shabbos table is a time where all children learn to share the attention that they are getting from their parents. But if this particular child is trying to get attention and has difficulty tolerating that other children exist and require attention at that time, such a child would surely use a shock factor negative behavior to paralyze the rest of the members of the family and stop the proceedings of the Shabbos table. Very neat. Very smart. In general, because I'm so afraid of any covert messages sent to a child that you're not welcome at a Shabbos table, I do my best to get parents into the mindset of surviving a few Shabbos meals where the word stinky is in the environment. I know it's not appropriate. I know it's not pleasant. I know that you're going to be afraid that the rest of your kids are all going to start saying stinky, stinky as well. But I promise you that if you and your husband take it upon yourselves not to hear it at all, even from your other children, the behavior will die out. Unfortunately, when you separated her from the table, you accomplished a few negative goals. One, the child learned that there are times that she's not welcome at the Shabbos table, which is a bit scary looking forward. Two, the child was locked out of your house. I'm never comfortable with locking kids anywhere unless we are dealing with a safety concern. And three, for some reason, this child viewed being separated from the Shabbos table as some form of attention and therefore continued the behavior after you brought her back. So I'm going to ask you to survive 6 Shabbosos like this. That's 12 Shabbos meals. I practically promise you that it won't last that long. Imagine you have a guest from Australia, a niece or a nephew that you are doing a tremendous chesed for and taking into your house. You're clothing him or her, feeding him or her, housing him or her, but you're not responsible for his or her chinuch, so you really don't care. You appreciate the beautiful opportunity for your other children to observe you totally ignoring this behavior. You will be very pleasantly surprised to see how quickly your other children and this child drop these behaviors because there is no audience for them in your home. Okay, so far I have not heard back from the person who asked this question in Lecture 16, so I have no idea what the end of the story was, but that's okay. What we all have to know is the 3 components that apply to this scenario. 1, never send a child away from a Shabbos table or any other Frumkeit-related events such as a yontif table, menorah lighting, havdalah, etc. 2, never lock a child anywhere. That's restraint. We don't do restraint. And 3, negative attention is more desirable to a child than no attention at all. So if you talk about the behavior, get angry about the behavior, tell the child to stop the behavior, or ask the child to promise that he or she won't repeat the behavior, you are actually putting gas in the car and feeding the behavior. The child then knows that he or she was successful at pressing your buttons and will surely repeat the behavior sometime in the not-so-distant future. Okay, now comes the next question, and here it is. The caller said, "Hi, a few weeks ago you mentioned a question from someone that their child was speaking inappropriately by the Shabbos Suda. But before you answered, you commented, 'Okay, it's not cursing.' So I'm wondering what your approach is with cursing. This is specifically regarding my son with special needs. My son, who is a teenager with special needs, had a classmate during 1 year of school that switched into his school from a Gaisha school, and he brought cursing along with him. And my son was on his bus and in his class, and he's verbal, and yep, he picked it up. I'm just curious about what your approach would be. At that point, the behavior specialist at the school suggested to just ignore it. He's doing this just to get your attention. But it turned out that he wasn't doing it just for attention. He was doing it out of abuse, out of anger. Now, the obvious thing would be, our caller says, don't trigger his anger. But obviously, with these kids, it's easier said than done. I'm just curious what your take would be on this." Very good question. Very brave question. So let's set up an answer to this question. The first comment I'm going to make is that no, the obvious answer should not be not to make him angry, because he cannot be shielded from triggers that make him angry for the rest of his life. That is simply not realistic. We all have to learn how to experience and manage our anger, no matter who we are, whether we're special needs or not. So don't go tiptoeing around him and trying to avoid triggering him. He needs to learn how to cope, and the best way for this to happen is for him to experience anger from time to time. Now here comes my next comment. I'm going to assume that when our caller describes her child's behavior as cursing, she means the absolutely most terrible words that only Goyim use. These are words that cannot be tolerated in a Yiddish home, even for a second. Having said all that, here's a list of 5 underlying components that cause a person to behave in general and engage in negative behaviors, but the 5th underlying component is specific to cursing. Here they are. The first and the most common form of negative behavior stems from a desire for attention. We call these behaviors attention-seeking behaviors. The reason children engage in negative behaviors to gain attention is because often it is too difficult for them to master positive skills well enough to obtain our positive attention. It's simply easier to engage in a negative behavior and get negative attention for it. The theory is that negative attention is more desirable to a child than no attention at all, so children will automatically be pulled to do something negative to get attention because it's the easiest and most efficient way to do so. And when these negative behaviors happen, we, the parents and educators, quickly and consistently fall into their trap. We comment about the negative behaviors, we consequence about the negative behaviors, we threaten about the negative behaviors, we preach about the negative behaviors, and in dysfunctional cases, we hit and yell about negative behaviors. All of this adds up to loads of negative attention, which actually reinforces the behaviors and causes them to occur over and over and over again. The second type of negative behavior comes from impulsivity or loss of impulse control. These behaviors happen when a child loses sight of the outcomes of the negative behavior and doesn't see the behavior's results quick enough to control the behavior before it happens. Lack of ability to control impulses are manifest during certain age groups. For example, the terrible twos and adolescents. In theory, there is no magical way to obtain relief from negative behaviors that occur during these age groups. The only thing we can do is to take extra care not to inject negativity into our reactions to these behaviors, because these negative reactions damage relationships. And that damage lasts way past the time when these behaviors are outgrown. What a shame. Examples of this are a two-year-old biting, a two-year-old pulling hair, teenage chutzpah. So separate without comment, or SWC, is the best way to accomplish this goal. Do your best to keep the child as separate as humanly possible from the behavior without reacting negatively. The third type of negative behavior stems from lack of impulse control that results from some diagnoses, for example, ADHD, attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder, and ASD, autism spectrum disorder. These behaviors are usually treated with a combination of medications or ABA sessions or both. These treatments work slowly over time and program the child's brain to behave in a more appropriate fashion. Parents must be patient, seriously patient, and know in advance that these treatments take time and commitment. The fourth cause of negative behavior is, Baruch Hashem, extremely rare and is not within the scope of these lectures. These behaviors stem from a child's lack of conscience, the child's inability to understand that he or she might be wrong at times, might have done something incorrect at times. These behaviors come with malicious, mean, and sadistic behaviors and get treated through psychotropic medications. Once again, parents need to be patient. These treatments take time and commitment. The fifth and last cause for negative behaviors is all about cursing behaviors specifically. It's a syndrome known as Tourette's syndrome. This syndrome can start in childhood. It is pretty rare and has to do with the wiring of the brain. In some really extreme cases, the wiring breakdown leads to inappropriate language and extreme cursing. So now let's get back to the actual question. Our caller mentioned that her child picked up cursing behaviors from a classmate and a busmate. So that would usually knock off Tourette's syndrome. She also mentioned that the behavioral specialist in school felt that the behavior was attention-seeking and that attention to these behaviors should be withdrawn, but that didn't seem to work. So technically, according to the letter of the law, if you really wanted to know if this behavior was attention-seeking, the way to do it would be to ignore it for 40 straight days and see if the behavior diminishes. The problem is that our caller is dealing with some serious cursing here, and I cannot tell her to ignore this filthy language in the presence of her other children for 40 days. So here's our predicament. This behavior is not ignorable. So INB won't work regardless if the behavior therapist was correct in her assumption that this behavior is attention seeking. Either way, we can't ignore four-letter words in the Yiddish Shtib. So what next? When a behavior is not ignorable, we usually do separate without comment, SWC. But here's the problem. This behavior is verbal. So how do we do SWC on a verbal behavior, on something a child is saying? We must obviously move on. And by the way, the reason I'm going through the handsful thought process out loud is because I want to give over the skill to you of how to answer these questions on your own. It's no kunst if I just tell you what to do, because whereas you might know what to do now, you don't know how to think about another problem when it surfaces. So I'm trying to break it down so that you will know what to do on your own. So the only strategy that is left for a non-ignorable verbal behavior is a timeout of sorts. The problem is that any form of timeout is only valuable if the child or teenager will go to timeout when you tell them to. Because after all, go to timeout is a command. And if you haven't been following the Hands Full program up to now and your teen is not accustomed to obeying you, then how are you going to get him into timeout? By the way, this is one of the most classic mistakes made by parents and educators, is that they attempt timeout before they have laid the behavioral foundation of frustration, tolerance, and obedience, which are the prerequisites for impulse control. So hopefully our caller has some control over this teen and would be able to get him to go to timeout for this behavior. The adolescent form of timeout is known as time and space. For adolescents who are developing normally, we teach them on 72-hour mode. That means at a calm time when the behavior is not happening, then if someone does XYZ negative behavior, in this case it would be cursing, then that means that they need to gain control over themselves. And the best way to do that is to separate themselves from those around them. The way to do that is to go into a room and take time and take space. That's why we call this method time and space. Although this might not always be possible, do your best to reassure your teen that time and space is not a punishment. This method is designed only for teenagers and is different than the timeout method that is designed for children ages 0 to 10. Now, understandably, a child who is not developing typically might have difficulty understanding that time and space is not a punishment. Even so, proceed with time and space as follows. Mark your calendar. You're going to be time and spacing for 40 days. Every time your child utters a curse word, send them to time and space. Don't explain what, where, when, or how. Just say, take time and space. If necessary, walk your teen to a room nearby. It does not have to be one particular room, and say, take time and space here. Your teen will likely come out of the room immediately. That's fine, as long as he doesn't curse again. If he curses again, send him back to time and space. Most parents get thrown over when a child repeats the negative behavior after coming out time and space. I get calls all the time. I tried it. It didn't work. This is a complete mistake. If your child comes out of time and space and curses again, then that makes me believe that he is beginning to connect the time and space with the actual cursing. This is actually an excellent sign. So don't despair. Just put him back in time and space again. If you do this consistently for 40 days without listening to anybody else's well-meaning advice and without deviating for any reason whatsoever, you will be pleasantly surprised. Now, if our caller is dealing with other behavioral problems with this child and is not able to get the teen into time and space, then it's best to start the hands-full program from the beginning and establish frustration tolerance and obedience. This can be mastered by getting a hold of the hands-full textbooks, handbooks, or audiobooks and following protocol. Otherwise, feel free to reach out to Nishmo Saini again and leave another message. Wishing you all hatzlacha handling your child's behaviors as they come along. Have a great week.